Hey everybody, I'm Alex Dolan, the creator of the Patron Saint of Suicides, and I'm here with Elisa Park, who plays Haven Otomo, Rob Schwarb, who plays Detective Blossom, and partner in crime at Audio Media, Vince DiGianni. Hi everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
And this is the season two recap, where we get to dish some spoilers may come up, so if you feel like not getting spoiled, then I would recommend going back and listening to the season. For those who have listened to the season already, thank you. Elisa, what was your experience in the season?
I mean, in season one, it was a lot of like, we did rehearsals and then we recorded alone, sort of, or semi-alone. Well, I guess it was like a little bit different because I feel like I was recording live, I guess, like we all recorded together.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it because the cast has just like expanded a lot or...
I feel like it was about the same, and I'm only saying that because I'm looking through the casting list because we're casting for season three.
Oh.
I wonder if it's just the nature of how these shows get put together, and Vince, you probably are better to answer this than I am.
I really wanted to try to get both of you guys in the same room in the scenes that you'd be in together so that we could really, you know, play off that dynamic. Unlike in that first season where we were recording everybody separately. So it was Alex, Elisa, and I, and then it was Rob, Alex, and I. So yeah, I think the goal this time was just to try to get everybody together, at least for those rehearsals, so that obviously you knew what we were looking for. And then, you know, if you had to record the plentiful amount of, you know, VO or multiple takes or something like that, you'd, you know, have that as a reference.
Yeah, I definitely appreciated the change for it. Mm-hmm. And I think most of what I was recording was done live this season.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any voiceover stuff or anything like that, like you did. But the first season was very, obviously Vince was kind of reading back the lines to kind of act up, you know, with. So doing all the scenes that we were in together actually being able to hear what you were sounding like, how you were responding, I thought was an awesome kind of change of pace compared to the first season.
Something I don't really think about until the other cast members get back to me, like Jason Webb, who plays your boyfriend very well, by the way, or Richie Amons, the narrator, or Georgia McKenzie, who plays Gibson. They reach out to me and they say, hey, this is great. And I forget that no one really knows what the full story is.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You know, it's not that I'm protective over the script. It's like I just feel like everyone's busy and no one has time to read, in this case, 12 episodes of script. So, you know, we just hand out the lines.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because we've been getting the full script. So
yeah, we have.
I was just under the impression everybody was. I didn't know that we were kind of in the know here. I feel so special now.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's different though, because like you and I are in like every episode for at least like half to three quarters of the script. So
yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, it totally makes sense that that's the case, but I just didn't even think about it that for some of the other actors there, that they would be listening to it and being maybe blindsided with some of the twists and stuff that I was like, yeah, I was blindsided while I was reading it, you know, initially.
Yeah,
yeah, same. I do think it's interesting hearing about like Rob's experience recording compared to mine, because when I was thinking about like remembering it, I feel like I recorded a lot alone. Like not even Chroma was there. I was just like alone with my mic. And like we had rehearsals. Where Chroma was like, these are my notes. And then when you record it, keep these notes in mind. But I guess it's because I have a lot of monologues. So it'd be like, yeah, it's interesting. Because when I was like talking mm-hmm. about it and then hearing Rob talk about his experience, I was like, yeah, it's a little bit different.
In season one, we recorded all of your VO like in the same sessions that we were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this time, obviously it made more sense to not have those VOs recorded while everybody was around so that you could just, you know, knock them out on your own.
And all the VO during my scenes are handled by Richie. I don't have voiceover. I'm just...
Yeah.
I mean, if I could choose somebody to do the VO for my scenes, he'd be the top. So
Rob, you basically outsourced all your VO.
Rob likes to have a narrator describe what's going on for him. He doesn't need to describe what's going on.
I mean, I do that in my normal life, too. It's not even just the podcast. So it gets expensive, but it's worth it.
Right.
I think it makes a lot of sense, though, for just the kind of guy Blossom is versus the kind of guy that Haven is, where Haven is, like, very internal and, like...
Well, and also, like, kind of the detective, you know, like, you get that very detective story, like, have that narrator describing how he's doing it, versus yours is, yeah, you're getting more your own internal dialogue, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Haven is someone who thinks a lot about herself and is... somewhat emotionally vulnerable, emotionally expressive, I guess I should say. And Blossom is like, I don't know, a bit more of a mysterious kind of guy, I think.
Yeah. I would love to hear an episode with Blossom as, you know, inside his head,
yeah,
though.
Mysterious is good. Ooh, maybe we don't want to hear it.
Oh, God, yeah. It's just screaming.
Who knows?
Oh, no. Blossom seems like a good guy.
So I don't know if we talked about this in season one, but there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
So it was very intentional. And one was, in the show really is about Haven.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get inside her head a little bit more. And I wanted people to see the world the way she saw it. And there's also, there's so much more turmoil because she is somebody who does wonderful things to help people, but also horrible things. And so the dichotomy of it, or I should say the fluidity of being able to do really good and really bad things, I thought it's an interesting thing for me to explore how dynamic people are. And so for me, I wanted to get inside of Haven's head. For the Blossom scenes, part of the reason I wanted somebody like Richie was, there were a couple of reasons. One, I wanted somebody who could be a stark contrast. Both the way he spoke, but also the tone. So it's a little bit one step remove. In a way, I wanted somebody to embody the voice of Oakland, California. So there was a reason for that. It was somebody who was that omniscient narrator who could kind of set the overall scene. In a way, the Haven is kind of the on-the-ground, eyes on the ground. Richie is like the 30,000-foot view.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like that's an interesting choice to continue for season two, because I guess from my end at least, I thought season two was very much like, it's all about Blossom, baby.
Hmm.
All about the Blossom.
Yeah, not to say that like Haven doesn't do anything.
I don't know if it was, I'd say all about Blossom season two, but it was a little more, yeah, it was definitely different than how season one unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
When season one happened, and I think I mentioned in the last, like, when we did this, where I was like, oh, Blossom's such a mysterious guy. And I still think Blossom's a mysterious guy. But I feel like you kind of get, like, a little bit more insight into who Blossom is as, like a regular dude rather than, like, a cop dude.
Well, because so much of the season is, kind of him trying to help protect his son and doing all the stuff to, you know, that's directly attacking someone in his family. And then you also get those peaks where he does explain more about what happened to his wife and, you know, all the stuff that was clearly not going to be something he would share with anybody about. You get that peek behind the curtain a little bit.
It's so interesting to sort of see, like, we don't go into his head and we do see this 30,000-foot view, even when it's talking about a really emotional thing, like what happened to his wife, you know, as Blossom talks about it, so removed.
I guess that does characterize Blossom really strongly, though, that even in those moments, he's kind of distant.
I think even recording it, I think that was my favorite scene to record this past season, as far as kind of unveiling for the character. But then the exact opposite side of that, the other favorite part was... I think it was one of the first things that we recorded as Haven and Blossom. So it was one of the first times we had acted, across from each other was, I think it was like episode 4 or something like that, where it was that kind of that confrontation of saying, I can't trust you. Are you the one, are you walking Sam? Like that very, you could tell how he's so angry with her for everything that she had already put him through. And now he feels like maybe she's doing this too. And so it's very two different scenes, but those were easily my two favorite times recording for the second season personally.
He parallels Haven to me in a way where you get the fluidity of who he is as well. or he's somebody who does want to protect his son. And in general, he does want to do the right thing. But, you know, as we get on the season, we pry apart these secrets of he can be that and can also be the other thing that hurts people. And one of the things I loved about the story is that the first season was really, you know, establishing the character, and it was, for me, Haven getting over this traumatic event and finding reasons, ways to cope with it. And then by the end of it, you realize that she's committed a massive transgression. And then season two, for me, was kind of about this arc of accountability.
Yeah.
So in a way, she's being punished.
Atonement.
Well, it's not quite atonement. But that will be coming in season three. But this was sort of like the second act for me was about there's the transgression and then the consequences mm-hmm. of that transgression. And for Blossom, it's more about seeing him become unhinged and going from this stoic guy who's doing his job and kind of getting sucked into this to this all of a sudden getting very personal for him. And so you see a little bit more of the human side because he's starting to unravel.
Yeah, it's definitely put in a position where it made it easy for him to unravel a bit.
Yeah, I mean, if that was my kid, I might also get pretty mad.
Yeah.
Well said.
I would agree with that.
One of the things that I love about both seasons is AJ Beckles, who was supposed to be on the call and has the good fortune of just being in demand and working a lot. So AJ, if you listen to this, we love you. We love the work you're doing.
Good work.
And we're happy that you're working.
Absolutely.
So AJ was Turo Torres in the first season. And it's funny because he always describes that as a villain. But I'll go on record. Turo's not the villain in season one at all. And, you know, so for season two, he is definitely the villain.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that he's almost like a good luck totem for the show. I like bringing him back for another role.
Yeah, incredibly talented. I remember listening to that first season, and obviously every time he was on, he was great. But that whole last episode where obviously everything's unveiling and his character is then put in that very dire position, and there's so much so much being described of what's happening, and the entire time in the background you can kind of just hear him sobbing and dealing with it, and I was just like, man, he had to have been recording crying and this emotional distress for just, you know, 10 minutes at a time, just this huge length of it, and the entire time I was almost like listening just to him as he was doing it. But I mean, he's obviously incredibly talented, and when I heard he was coming back as the villain for the second season, I mean, you knew he was just gonna crush it. So,
Is he gonna be back for season three?
He will be back for season three.
as Walking Sam, right? Yeah, because that was kind of the cliffhanger, right, of the end of the season, is that he's still there.
Yeah. True.
I should say he'll be back as Owen Olsen.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh,
that is a distinction.
Yes, it is. If anybody's paying close attention.
Yes. And not Owen Wilson.
That's a good distinction.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and the only other thing I would add in there too is my oldest brother listens to these weekly as they come out. And like halfway through the season, at some point, he messaged me. He was like, "Do you also play Walking Sam?" I was like, "No, I don't. That's another guy who's doing it." He's like, "Oh, you're just like your cadence and the way you guys deliver your lines, I thought it was very similar." And little does he know that was one of the greatest compliments to be that, "Oh, wow, you sound like AJ Beckles." I was like, well, I could never imagine a greater compliment.
Where I thought the story was going is he was going to say, "This sounds exactly like when you torture me on the dark web."
That would have taken quite the twist, yes.
Another thing that I liked is that when we started season one, part of the process was both of you developing your characters, and it's fun for me kind of as the writer, but I also wonder if it was kind of fun for you to have this really established story arc and then being able to just drop back into character and see where it goes.
I definitely feel like that first season was, for me especially, like the first handful of episodes was kind of getting a feel of it and, you know, kind of figuring out the tone we were aiming for and kind of figuring out who he was. And didn't have that same worry going into the second season. I was just like, okay, yeah, we have really established. But you also get to explore the other side of it, especially with Blossom of, hey, I know who this character is, but oh, now I get to see kind of this other side of him dealing with everything with his son. So it was a very different experience between the two seasons.
I agree with you in that, like, in season one, I think even we had recorded all of the episodes and then we went back and recorded some of the earlier ones again because it was like, oh, that like the voice has changed a little bit or like the delivery has changed a little bit. So it was nice that like, well, I didn't have to do that this time. Like you just like get into it and you're like, yeah, this is what Haven sounds like. But it was very different because like even from the script, you could tell Haven was kind of a different person. Like she was still herself, but like not as many like jokes, not as much like thinking about stand-up comedy. She's in a different phase of her life, a phase of her life that is like maybe feels a bit more stable, maybe feels a little bit more stagnant. She's tired. So it kind of felt like a bit of a different character at the same time.
I mean, one of the thoughts going into season two is that I thought of season one as her being on a mission, and her mission, like that was the job, is to basically kill four people. And everything else was kind of a coping mechanism to get through it. So, you know, the way I thought of her character is once season one was over, the job was done. And so for her, it made sense to me for her to shift a little bit because it represented a change of life or a reason to change. And then part of it is that once the audience knows who she is, I just thought it would be weird to have her in season two be like, all right, time to go do stand-up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with her new job. She's got other things to think about.
We talked about it before the season launched, obviously, when you were writing it still, about how Haven wasn't going to do comedy. And I don't think I knew that it was that piece that you thought it would be weird for the audience, because I think I would have probably pushed back on that and said we could have made some really great scenes for the audience, knowing that she is this terrible person cracking jokes in front of people. Yeah, I could just like envision it now. I think it's just would have created a cool dynamic. My hot take is that it really is, as Elisa said, it's Blossom season this season. So now I'm just thinking about, like, you know, season three sort of being, as we've talked about the plot so far, almost a return to the, I guess, inner dynamics of season one.
Well, everything I know about season three is just about Haven, but I always assumed that was just because I play Haven. So I'm sure that Blossom has some juicy scenes too.
Man, I know nothing. I know nothing about season three. I know there is one. That's about the extent of what I've got. I am on the edge of my seat to see the direction it goes.
Well, so let's tease it out. So there's going to be a season three. And this will be the final season. So this will be the third act in the story. So we'll get to see a resolution for both Blossom and Haven. And as of today, we have fully cast the season.
Awesome.
And there were a lot of new roles we had to cast. So, and I'm real excited. We've got some great people. And this is an opportunity to reconnect Haven with her roots. So we're going to meet Haven's mother for the first time. And she'll be a pretty pivotal role in this. And we'll get to see a little bit more of her father, who has passed away, but who is Toby Gensler, who is a fairly legendary comic actor who killed himself when she was young. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to experience him more through old movies of his in season three. I'm excited for it because it'll also be a little bit different. And I really liked the tone shift, hoping the audience did too, where the season one for, you know, it was a mystery, right? It was basically a mystery. And season two kind of went into the thriller horror, you know, area. And this is going to be something else. It'll be
family drama.
it'll be like a Lifetime special, and hopefully it'll wrap things up in a satisfying way for people who have. I'm very grateful for staying with us for two seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I'm definitely looking forward to it.
I'm excited for Haven's mom, just from how Haven talks about her mom. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, very tense relationship.
Haven is one of those people who has like both mommy issues and daddy issues.
Yeah, she has got some issues. That's for sure.
We'll be right back to break down more of season two after the break. Welcome back to the Patron Saint of Suicides behind the scenes episode. Let's jump back into the conversation.
I will say I'm grateful that both of you were also able to bury the hatchet after your vicious feud in season one.
Yeah, me too. I really liked the dynamic in season two, where they're like tentative allies, maybe yeah. Budding friends.
Oh yeah, real tense.
Well, there's like a level of like, I guess like trust and honesty, at least on Haven's end. I don't know how you feel about like how Blossom thinks about it, where it's like Haven is able to have a certain level of intimacy that she clearly can't have with anyone else, like not even her boyfriend with Blossom.
Well, she's hiding so much from Wesley as it is. So
yeah. I
think not anymore.
From, well, right. Yeah. At the end that he tells her. But yeah, I can definitely see where from her side of it, she's like, well, I can be open with him. But for the whole probably first half or a good portion of the season,
He
does not agree with that. He doesn't trust anything she says. And then I do like the kind of after that confrontation, kind of getting over to the switch of, okay, I do believe you, but let's move forward to address the new issue here. And so there that new new relationship that they had at that point was definitely I did enjoy that as well. Absolutely.
I think part of the magic of season one was that Blossom and Haven sort of almost always had a very intimate relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Even if she was obviously still lying to him, she was very open with him and like vulnerable in a lot of ways. And I think that translated well into that first season. So then, you know, everybody's obviously hoping for the team up if they're not going to be butting heads the whole time as you go into season two, because we could have kept it going like, you know, Blossom was still on to her trying to get her, you know, thrown in jail or something like that. But then once you see this new threat emerge, it's sort of like the, you know, enemy of my enemy type thing. And then you kind of want the team up to happen, and it gets to, which is great.
Yeah. I'm going to non sequitur for a second, but it ties back to this, which is if anyone's listening, and I have a feeling anyone who's been listening to the show might have some sort of connection to caring about mental health issues and health and well-being. And there is a wonderful movie on Hulu. I don't know if anyone that I'm talking to now has seen it, but it's a magician named Derek Delgadio, and he has a film called In and of Itself. And it's based on this live performance he did in New York. And he's a magician, but it's a magician who's doing illusions with the purpose of showing how complex we are as people. And one of the, at the beginning of the show, in the lobby, there's this wall, and it's kind of like paint swatches, just a huge wall of swatches. And they all say, I am something. And when you go in, you have to pick one of these off the wall, and then you tear it in half and you give it to whoever's at the door and you go and sit down. And there's about 500 people in the audience. And because he's a magician, he has an incredible memory. And so toward the end of the show, he has everyone stand up and he tells them what they are. And so that's the illusion part of it. But the emotional weight of it is that these people who are self-identifying as whatever was on the card, in some cases, they feel like they've been truly seen for the first time. And they just break because the emotional weight of it. It's beautiful, actually. And it resonated with me in terms of the show, because I feel like part of the reason Blossom and Haven get drawn to each other is that they see each other and they understand each other. And there's this unspoken magnetic pull toward each other, not because they like each other or there's any friendship, but because Blossom knows Haven, knows who she is, like Elisa, like you were saying. And in season two, part of the reason that Blossom opens up is that he has that need too, in terms of finding someone to unburden himself on.
I mean, yeah, he clearly hadn't told anybody, even his own son, before he had told Haven what, you know, kind of what had happened there. So I was going to say, like, obviously she had, all of her secrets had been put out in front of everything, kind of at the end of the first season, and then he's almost reciprocating that in a way in that second season there. So I definitely see what you're saying.
Alisa, is there any scene that jumps out for you?
All of the ones where I had to really hurt myself. Mm. Those ones were so spooky.
Yeah.
I was eagerly waiting to hear how you had recorded the light bulb eating scene.
Yeah, that one was really wild. I also like the scene where Haven goes to Blossom's house, if I remember correctly. I don't know. I just thought it was like kind of funny when she like kind of crosses that barrier in a physical space to like be more involved in Blossom's life. And I think both times she like has something kind of like snippy to say, but like, all right, I guess this is how you live. Damn, you live like this?
Exactly. And then, yeah.
I don't know. It's just like, oh, that's pretty funny.
I mean, that's sort of like the comic drive where she sees an inn and can't leave it alone.
Yeah.
Like she has to make the comment.
But I guess that's like also to some degree like that level of intimacy as well. That, you know, when you go to a friend's house and there's like a bit of friendly ribbing, even though they're not friends at all.
Right.
I feel like Haven's a socially aware enough person that like if she went to like Clementa's house and it looked like ass, that she wouldn't say anything mean. But with Blossom, she's just like, all right, thought I'd be different, huh? This is this is interesting. I also really like the scenes with Walking Sam. Like the one where Walking Sam and Haven first interact is like so tense. And Walking Sam is like such a fun guy. And the on the phone call was like, I don't know, Walking Sam, spooky guy, but also so fun.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a similar to Haven, like a theatricality about it, right?
The top hat.
I definitely appreciated the where he was making her eat cyanide. He's like, it's not enough to kill you. You'll be fine. Yeah. And then you find out that it wasn't cyanide at all. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of fucking with her.
As strychnine, actually.
Strychnine. Okay, that's right. That was it.
Strychnine, which was, as we know later, is not strychnine. By the way, I had to look up the pronunciation of strychnine because I always pronounce it strychnine. Yeah. Apparently, that's not the real pronunciation.
I think that's how I pronounced it.
That's probably how most people, I would say.
It's how I would have pronounced it, yeah.
The Walking Sam stuff is probably a highlight of the season, too, because we do get to see that person that's more evil than Haven. And, you know, they're literally just messing with her, as you find out towards the later parts of the season.
Well, yeah, as you find out that Clementa was really involved in giving him all that background information.
Mm-hmm. So Walking Sam was an interesting character to create because I'd gone into, the way I think about Haven is really good at persuading people to do things, and in both good and bad ways. And that was, you know, what I wanted to explore is that the bad side, obviously, she's able to convince four grown men to stand on a train track and wait for a train to hit them. And that requires incredible powers of persuasion. And at the same time, the good part of that is she's able to talk people out of hurting themselves by talking them off the Golden Gate Bridge. And for this season, I wanted her antithesis. So I wanted somebody who was equally persuasive, but persuaded people to hurt themselves. And I thought it would be interesting to see two of those people go head to head. And as far as the Walking Sam character, I've mentioned this, I think, in the kind of the talk before season two, but it's based on a real thing. It's based on a real legend from South Dakota. There really is a Walking Sam. For those listening, you can look him up. And he is a slender man character who is a tall man and a tall, thin man in a dark coat with a top hat. And he whispers to you in the woods until you kill yourself. And it's sort of a mashup between that, and there is this legend of something called a blue whale, which is a dark web challenge. A blue whale is technically 50 days, but the idea is that you would successively hurt yourself over the course of 50 days. I don't know whether it is actually anyone's actually ever done a blue whale, but that is a myth that's out there as well.
Yeah. After reading through the script, I immediately Googled, like, it was, where did he get this, and is this a real thing? And yeah, it seems like there's some controversy, whether, like, it sounds like it kind of started in, I think, like, Russia, and then there was stories of this really happening, but then maybe it didn't really happen, and so no one's quite sure if there were actually people who were hurting themselves and then ultimately killing themselves, or was that internet rumor, like, you know, kind of an internet myth type of situation, kind of like Slenderman, just like you were saying before. So,
and for the record, my God, I hope no one actually is doing that.
I don't think I'm a disbeliever.
I'm a little skeptical myself that someone would actually put themselves through that, but
that's the optimist in all of us hoping, like, no, that can't be real. That's not true.
The world is a wild place.
The interesting thing that I wanted to talk about logistics with that part, the idea of eating the light bulb was something that I saw talked a lot about on Reddit, in Discord, even like iTunes reviews. Shout out, we read those, and yes, you can actually eat a light bulb without causing any major damage to yourself. Just depends what type of light bulb and how finely you chew the glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we had a couple people that are just like, this is so fake.
What a skill to have. Mm-hmm. Add that to the resume. What are special skills you have?
for about 6 years, I lived in New York. And there is, if you go to New York, there is a famous freak show in Coney Island. There's the Coney Island Freak Show. Again, you can look this up. And they do that. There's a guy that is what they call a blockhead, that you can literally drive a nail up into through your nose. There are people that eat glass and eat light bulbs. So it's a real thing that I have seen people do. I've seen somebody swallow a 3-foot sword. It's like, you can do that stuff. But if you're not, I mean, it takes probably years of training to be able to do that without hurting yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Haven definitely was cutting her mouth during all of that. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting thing to learn that it was possible afterward.
You know, in the same regard, and this is talked about in the show, somebody could stick their head underwater for 3 minutes. It is possible that people do that. It's just, if you're not trained to do that, you can hurt yourself. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think the world record is like 20 minutes or something. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's some insane, like, especially like deep divers and stuff will, yeah, have crazy lung capacity and that they can hold their breath that long. But like you said, for somebody who's Haven and is not trained to do that, yeah, you're probably gonna pass out, and then if you pass out, maybe you stay in the tub and maybe you drown, like, yeah. You know, that's probably not the safest thing to be, you know, messing with.
Well, keep in mind, Walking Sam doesn't want to kill you. Walking Sam wants you to do it for him, so he's only doing things that will hurt you enough to demoralize you.
I mean, you do think about, like, people who are, you know, being tortured or something like that, like, at some point you just kind of want it to stop. So it does make sense that even if this is a myth of the, you know, the blue whale, that it could be possible.
Something I would love to address, because people have asked me about it, is when the Walking Sam servers get found, or the Sam's Market servers get found, I've gotten feedback from people saying, well, what happened? How do they find the servers? And that question is a really good question. The reason I did it like that is that if you look into, I would imagine most people know what Silk Road is, but it was a really famous dark web market. And when they found the servers, I think the servers might have been Iceland, and people asked them how they found it. I've tried to look it up, but the best answer I get was, yeah, don't worry about that. and recently there was, I think within the last year, there was another really big dark web market that also got busted. And I tried to look for how they did that. And they're like, yeah, don't worry about that. We just found it. So I think there's some behind-the-scenes stuff going on. It will be explored and answered in season 3, but there's a reason why it just was very abrupt. Because in looking at these things, it seems like law enforcement isn't very forthcoming with how they find this stuff.
Well, they also probably don't want others to know how they found it, so that future people know their, you know, their methods. So it kind of makes sense that they wouldn't exactly want to volunteer that that information.
Yeah, I mean, also looking at it logistically, like the story is following Haven and Blossom, and you know, he was sort of on the outs when they found all of that information. Makes sense that we wouldn't really know what's going on in the police department, just like he doesn't.
That's a good point. Yeah, like his and Gibson's relationship aren't nearly as close as they are in the first season. That's for sure.
Yeah, Blossom's getting shut out by the end of it.
What about like Easter eggs, Alex? Let's talk about like if there was anything that I know a couple of things that come to my mind, but I want to know what you think about things that we changed sort of in the discussion before we actually finalized scripts, you know, plot points that were different or like anything fun that we can say, like this almost happened or, you know, something like that. I'm thinking of a big one towards the end, but I know there were a couple.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I initially had Walking Sam dying. I had Owen Olsen being shot down and just kind of wrapping up his character that way. And Vince, I mean, you had, I think, what was a great idea, which was calling back to the beginning where you have this fake shooter who brings fake guns into a school. And at the end, basically, Owen is pulling out a fake gun. And so he doesn't, so there's that, and he doesn't, he gets shot, but he doesn't, you know, get killed in this, so we can bring him back a little bit in season 3.
Mm-hmm. What a fun guy. I know he's not a nice man, but...
he's just, it's interesting, that guy, Owen Olsen, in a way, was inspired by a couple different people, but there's a really interesting documentary, I think on Netflix, called...
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Don't Trust
Cats. Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah,
and it's basically a guy who just wanted to be internet famous, and so part of it was thinking about. And there are a few other folks like that who,
yes,
they don't really have any identity. So he's glomming on to this artificial identity, and really he's driven by notoriety.
That's a very interesting motivator. Like,
yeah.
It's hard to get into the brain of somebody who's willing to do something so like truly evil as some of these people do, but like that's a different take of just get internet famous or just getting your name out there. Like, it's so superficial, but it's just stupid enough to be a good motivator.
It's also interesting because if his goal is notoriety, he's doing it under like a nom de plume. So it's like, what notoriety is he really getting? It's like a character is getting notoriety, and it's a character that like already exists in the world.
Mm-hmm. Not unless he comes out in public and gets busted.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also a reason why. I mean, he made it fairly easy to catch him. I mean, he's on social. He made no. He wasn't really hiding his profile. He didn't really go into hiding. He just was, all right, come and find me. And so that's also, I think, part of. When I was reading up on really, let's face it, guys like this, it was a lot of the same motivation of, I want to be famous. Maybe I'm going to hide around for a little bit, but ultimately I want to be recognized. So I'll come out of the shadows.
It's interesting.
I mean, there's also that analysis of serial killers, like the different types, and the power and control type is very much about just seeing how much control they would have over somebody. So even though he's not directly killing someone, you know, in most of the traditional sense, it's still very much that idea of like, he wants to feel powerful. Like when they're talking about his past and he made his friend drink a bottle of bleach or something, it's just the opposite of Haven, like Alex was saying, just seeing literally how much you can make someone do something.
I want to do horrible product placements in season 3 where we say things like, he made his friend drink a bottle of Clorox.
Whoa.
This is a different show, yeah. Alex, if you're going to go down the route of ironic, over-the-top ad placements.
Well, I'm just thinking of ways to monetize the show, right?
There you go. Sponsored by Clorox.
Clorox for all of your bleach. All right, I'll stop. Yeah.
There you go. No, this is actually brought to you by NordVPN. Don't get walking Sam'd.
Good advice.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing that I was talking about with the ending is we actually had Ben be the one in the tag at the end of the finale, be the person who walking Sam still contacted in this published version of Haven.
Yeah. I think part of it was I liked the idea that Ben would kind of be in the clear.
The poor boy. Hasn't he suffered enough?
Yeah, nobody wants to see a young child getting additionally tormented. So
yeah, yeah, we're not animals, you know.
Mm-hmm. I just love stuff like that where, you know, you can sort of tell the audience, oh, it was almost like this, or, you know, we almost did that part. You know, I think those things are always interesting.
Yeah, we completely wrote out Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sad. That was my favorite part.
It's a tough choice. Mm-hmm. Tough decision to make.
I really enjoyed the scenes that Haven had with Boba Fett, but I guess no one will ever hear them.
And again, AJ did an amazing Boba Fett.
That was the original villain.
He was the original, yeah.
Early rewrite, yeah.
The alternate universe version of season 2.
It's like the Marvel What If, yeah.
Haven's the worst superhero ever.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts from Alisa or Rob on season 2 or going into season 3? Anything you want to see or any thoughts?
I'd like to see more Ben, I guess.
little more Blossom family dynamic.
Yeah, I don't know. I like Blossom. I guess because I don't play Blossom, when I'm maybe more attached to him than I am to Haven. Because whenever I hear scenes with Haven, I'm just like, ugh, she's at it again.
Oh, she's the worst, yeah.
Get it together. The therapy isn't working.
Get your house in order. Well, so Lisa, this is an interesting question for me. Do you like listening to your own performance, or is it weird for you?
I don't mind listening to my own performance, but like, I guess when I listen to my own performance, I'm just like, that's just me. It's hard for me to be like, yeah, that's a different character. That's exactly Haven. I don't think I do a bad job or anything. I hope I don't.
No, you're amazing. Yeah.
But I guess it's hard for me to like listen back to myself and be like, yeah, that's a separate person who isn't me and has nothing to do with me.
Almost like very apparent that you're acting to you because obviously it's not like you.
Yeah.
Whereas Rob is just Blossom on the side, so he's fine.
Oh, yeah. Carbon copy. Exact same person.
Rob, how do you feel about listening to yourself?
I guess a little different because I do have, at least to some extent, changed my voice around a little bit. So I think I was worse about being just self-critical while listening to the first season compared to the second season. I've spent that whole first season just being like, okay, how did I do on that scene? whereas I kind of let that go a little bit more in the second season. I wouldn't say that I, like you said, because you play Haven, that you're more interested and more attached to Blossom. I'm equally interested in both on my end, But yeah, I'm happy I was able to get over the trying to be self-critical aspect from the first season. And then, I think it's just I'm so interested to see how it all comes together for each of those scenes, especially some of the, you know, the ones that we were really talking about, like when we were confronting each other and stuff. But yeah, I enjoy listening to the entire podcast, so it makes it easy. I'm just looking forward to the third season to kind of see how, like you said, it's final season, which is, you know, it's going to be amazing to see how it all wraps up. Getting that little bit of information about, we're going to dive a little more into Haven and her relationship with her mom and her kind of parents in general, seeing how that is able to wrap up and whatever direction you're going to take Blossom. I'm super curious.
You are going to do some horrible things in season 3. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's the answer I was hoping to hear.
Yeah, I mean, if I can tease season 3 a little bit here, it's for me probably my favorite, like as we're talking about the seasons, just because when I went into season 1, you know, obviously Alex and I talked about it and he was like, oh, by the way, Haven kills all these people. He's the bad guy. I was like, what the I haven't even read it yet. And then going into season 2, I, you know, of course knew that Walking Sam was Owen. And obviously we cast AJ. So, you know, if people are really listening, they might be able to figure it out. But anyway, when we were talking about season 3, you know, I read through the planning for it. And at the very end, I was like, okay, the mystery got me. Like, all right, that was good. So I think listeners are in store for more of the stuff that they loved in, you know, season one and season two. More mystery, more introspection from Haven, more outer turmoil from Blossom.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I'm ready. Let's do it right now.
I'm really excited. I can't wait to hear my mom.
I know. Yeah.
I'm so excited. You know, who can you be more vulnerable and messy with than your own mother?
Yeah. Well, all right. So I'd like to thank everybody for listening again. And thanks, everyone, for keeping up with season two and listening to season one. I'm really looking forward to the final act of the show. And I'm hoping that everything resolves and ties up in a way that's very satisfying for people. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to working with all of you again. So thank you.
I'm looking forward to the season three version of this call.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you again. It's for, you know, kind of having us on for this and the whole project in general. It's been a great, great experience.
Yeah. Thanks for making the time for this. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it as well.
Three, two, one, go.
Yeah. That sounded good.
Yeah.
I think we did it.
It's got to be a little bit of a delay in the
Rob,
thing.
What
it'll
the
be
hell?
Fine. It'll be fine. Was that me? I was way off?
That's so funny. I currently have a minute and 47 seconds of this. So.
Oh, jeez. Well, I'm at 4 minutes now, so.
This will be in the zany outtakes.
This will be the intro. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Us failing to clap repeatedly.